stay inspired.
Can't come from me separate. It has only can only come from me joining. Like if I go into a conversation and think about how to inspire, it's not gonna be Hilke doing a perfect job. It's gonna be, how do I work with these people so that we all walk out feeling taller on the inside?
Okay, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Welcome back to Inspired Leadership. My name is Tyler Bailey. I'm here with Susan Power. And today we're talking about connectiveness. Connectiveness. How connected are you to the people around you? How connected are you to life, to the experience that you're having? The right now. How connected are you? And before we dive deep into it, I want to take a second to say it has been an incredible joyride with this podcast. It has been absolutely amazing with the people that have reached out to us. I'm blown away on the support that we have for this cast. So thank you so much for being so supportive and letting this podcast grow into what it's become. And with that said, I'd like to introduce our next guest, Hilke Faber. Embarking on the exploration of connection has been Hilke's lifelong journey, shaping his career to assist individuals and groups in discovering their true essence. Transitioning from corporate roles such as consulting for major companies to establishing his own leadership company, he unearthed the profound impact of meditation in fostering inner tranquility and insight. And through coaching and teaching, he empowers others to embrace their innate potential. While his acclaimed book, Taming Your Crocodile, stands as a testament to his expertise in leadership development. You're gonna love this interview. Let's get more connected. Hilke, welcome to the Inspired Leadership Podcast. So happy to have you here.
Great to be here. Great to be here.
Can you tell us your story on how you got started in leadership development?
Well, it started in a series of what not to do. I was a strategy consultant in New York City. I was running super hard, 16 hours a day, loving what I did, but also not listening to very big parts of me. Then in the process, I developed insomnia, which was pretty formidable. And I was so tired of myself. I was so tired of myself. And what woke me up from my, you could say, achievement slumber was meditation. Because I suddenly had to face myself. And it's interesting when you become really still, almost needs no tool. That's why this is such a powerful practice. You sit and you have to be with, and you cannot unsee what you're seeing. And then at some point, I discovered that meditation actually solved it for me. Like an hour of meditation, I could sleep again. And I became so interested in that, that I almost became a monk. So I thought, well, maybe I can integrate what I learned as a strategy consultant with what I'm learning as a monk-like person. And so I entered this field of coaching about 20 years ago. So I didn't become a monk, but I'm a person that sits now with leaders and teams and organizations, basically trying to help them figure out what's true, what's most important to us. How can we connect to that, to ourselves, to each other, to our purpose, and lead and collaborate and work from that place.
Did you find that meditation gave you more self-awareness? Did it give you more emotional intelligence? What did you find? What was the real hit home moment for you that you said, wow, this is something I need to do in a daily practice?
Yeah, I'd say all of the above. The way I like to think about it is I find myself very caught in the surface level of my thinking mind, which always goes good, bad, better, 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 good, bad, some destination, always going towards something. And in meditation, it's almost like falling asleep while being awake. So I went from this really fast thinking mind to a much more insightful perspective that I found was nourishing, was caring, was wise, empathetic, all these things that I wanted to be, but only could access in peak experiences. In meditation, I discovered it's always there. All we need to do is just drop into it.
I just want to do a call out to another coach, entrepreneur. He does a daily live meditation series that anyone can join for free. And he has a channel where he shares the recording every day, and it's excellent. It's called Fresh Meditation. It's 10 minutes long, but I know I used to attend it. Now I just do the recordings. And I find it's exactly how you describe it, Hilka, that it's like going to that blue sky level to just get beyond the thinking mind. Like it makes such a difference when you're regular with it.
I get stuck in the yes, no mind. What advice would you give to anybody that's sitting in that and stuck in that?
So for me, it's first of all, accepting that of course I'm getting stuck. I'm a human being. A misunderstanding of meditation is to make the mind bad, to make the thinking bad. It's more to say, I'm developing a different relationship with that thinking mind, which is to say, I become kinder to it and say, oh, of course I'm stuck. Well, let me just be with that then for a second. Mm-hmm. I like the metaphor of the balcony and the dance, which I often use in leadership, where we could say, you know, we could be very much stuck in the dance of our activity. And that's important too, like you and I have a conversation, or the three of us having a conversation right now, right? So that being in the dance of that, which is great. And at the same time, we can step back onto the balcony by simply asking ourselves a question, which could be like, oh, what am I observing? Or what if I allowed myself to observe a little bit more clearly, or with a little bit more compassion? Just those simple questions can create some space, you could say, around what we might be stuck in so that we have a wider perspective.
Hilka, as you know, the theme of our podcast is inspired leadership, because we want to bring more of that to our world. So when you think of inspired leadership, what does that mean to Hilka?
A leader to me is somebody who's able to step out of their egoic fixations of like, I should be this or that, you know, good, perfect, and serve a bigger perspective. That to me is leadership, to help uplift the people around me. That's about leadership. And to me, inspired means I'm letting myself come from a place that's bigger than little mini me ego perspective that thinks I'm separate from you, but I'm connecting to something bigger. It can't come from me separate. It can only come from me joining. Like if I go into a conversation and think about how to inspire, it's not going to be Hilka doing a perfect job. It's going to be, how do I work with these people so that we all walk out feeling taller on the inside?
Wow, that inspired me. That answer gave me goosebumps. Yeah.
It does bring the next question. What's the purpose of your work on connectiveness?
I really am interested in helping people to connect more deeply to themselves, to what's true, to what's most important. Like we can get so swayed by what our mind and the minds around us try to convince us is most important, like the next deal or the next accolade or the next piece of safety or the next piece of belonging. And often these things are cheap surrogates for what we actually truly care about, our values, with our integrity, with empathy, with purpose. So that's what connectedness to me is about, to help people become curious and have as an orientation this question, like, how connected am I to what's most important to me?
And your new book that you have coming out, I think in 2025, The Connectedness Quotient, what's that about?
It's about how do you develop connectedness as a core life and leadership orientation for yourself as a leader and a human being, and how do you do that with teams, and teams in the broadest sense of the word. You know, teams to me are like the team, again, word geek, comes from the word family. And team could be your family, could be the people that, like, we are a little team right now talking with each other. Team could be the people that you work with at work all the time, your community, like whatever it is. And this book is about how do you develop connectedness to access this magnificent source that's within each of us and bring that to the fore. To me, it's about developing CQ, connectedness quotient, in addition to IQ and EQ.
What would you say is required to build a truly connected culture and team? What would you say is required?
I keep coming back to three pillars to develop connectedness. One is truthfulness, being really clear about what's most important. And what do I really care for? Like, I'm going to do my best. Like, I want to deliver a really good presentation. At the same time, I am still going to be enough, and so are you, no matter what happens, because who I am is already enough. So that's the truth. Second part is love. How can I truly be caring here and unconditionally loving towards myself, towards you, and extend that empathy to you? Put myself into your shoes. Like, what's life like in your shoes? There's a little quote from Ian McLaren, the Scottish theologian, that says, be kind because everybody you meet is facing a hard struggle. And the third pillar is purposefulness, being of service. Like, how do I put myself in service now and put myself in service to something bigger than my small agenda? How can I expand my agenda? That those three pillars are, to me, core to connectedness: truth, love, and service.
I love what you're saying, and I 100% agree with it. I'm thinking of corporate America, though, and how judgmental and competitive and egocentric a lot of leaders are. Not all leaders, but a lot are. So what advice do you have, Hilka, in how to support leaders in that environment to be more intentional about how they show up with courageous connectedness?
I love your question, Susan, because yes, corporate world, America world, corporate world, you could say even our world, our society is very judgmental. So how do we help leaders and each other to step out of that? Well, the first step to me is acceptance, saying, okay, of course you're going to be judging. Of course I'm going to be judging you. That's part of our makeup as part of the human evolution where we are at in 2024, right? This is where we're at. On average, we judge the heck out of each other. And in corporations, even more, because why? Because we have even more stresses on us and we're competing and we're working in this system where often it's a zero-sum game. At least it can be seen that way, right? So first thing is to accept that. And then the second thing is for a leader and a team to become aware of, so what does judgment do? Judgment is often a short-term fix, just like a drug that creates a momentary relief, like one-upping one somebody else. But in the long term, it only creates a lot of damage. On the, you could say, on the three dimensions of effectiveness, I, we, and it. You don't feel good, I, we, our relationship goes down. Like a leader who judges others will not be trusted, even though they can be very successful if they're command and control and have a lot of power. And then on the it, your effectiveness is going to go down because judging stifles people's creativity and mind like nothing else, right? So it gives people an email. It's almost like tricking the ego, gives the ego an incentive to say, well, maybe this isn't such a good, judgment seemed like a good idea, but maybe I should try something else. Maybe I try empathy this time, which doesn't mean I become a pushover. I still am clear about what's important to me.
How do you help yourself and others recover when you're disconnected?
First step, again, acceptance. Like, of course I'm disconnected. Because when we look deeply at why we're disconnecting, I think about three disconnectors: obsessing, our worrying mind, judging, like you talked about, and control is another one. These are strategies that you could say we are trained in, and we've been training ourselves as human beings in for thousands of years. So of course, as part of humanity, I'm going to have these things going on, especially when my reptilian survival brain gets activated, which in a high stress situation may be often. So the first thing is, of course. So not to judge the judger or to disconnect from the disconnector. It's like, of course. It's like having a workshop participant who's really angry. I've been in situations like that where somebody calls me an idiot in front of 1,000 people. You're an idiot. And my response to that can only be, huh, thank you for sharing. Tell me more.
That would be my response.
Tell me more. And how can I be of service now? Right? And sometimes there's nothing to say, but just simply the act of being present. Mm. Being present. That's another tool that I often use. On a scale from 1 to 10, how present am I right now with whatever is happening? So when I feel disconnected, can I still find a part in me that is connecting and reconnect there? It's like finding a little light switch somewhere in the room and flipping on a little light. It's like, oh, you're still here.
Love your analogies. Yeah.
You're responding with love when you thank them for calling you an idiot. Like, tell me more. I appreciate your candor, right?
Yeah. 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 Mm-hmm.
Taming of the Crocodiles is it's an award-winning book. What drove you to write it, as well as what advice would you have for leaders on taming their fears?
So Taming of Crocodiles came about after I'd been teaching a course at Columbia Business School Executive Education on this topic of leading as coach. Like, how do you, can you lead others towards their truth? Like, that's what the course was about for many years. I chose to focus very much on fear and on taming your fear, because what I found working with myself and others is that what seems to stand between us and really connecting to our heart is a sense of being afraid. Afraid what's going to happen when I become really honest. Afraid what's going to happen when I really speak up, or when I take this initiative, or when I don't comply. About that, I've been working with a coach who's now in her mid-80s since 2003. And she always asks me this question, is this a love or a fear thought? And that training, you could say, really inspired me to work with this, with the crocodiles, and write something about it. And in my work with clients, we often use this as a metaphor.
In terms of your work with clients, your company, the Growth Leaders Network, can you tell us a little bit about the type of work you do there on culture and team development? What's an example of something you might work on?
I think about a current assignment. I work a lot with technology companies. So I work with a couple thousand people organization in a large technology company, one of my clients. And one of their challenges is that they're advancing a new product, which requires a lot of collaboration between departments. And you guess it, you know, the crocodiles are like, oh no, I'm in my silo, I know better. Why do the engineers need to take the first pass at everything? You know, the product managers know a lot better. And people feel like there's a lot of what we can call entropy in that organization. Entropy means energy not available for productive use. Mm-hmm. So the first step in that is to map it in terms of culture. What are the current and aspired mindsets and behaviors? We call those from twos. What are the crocodiles, you could say, that are active? You know, like, you know, trying to be perfect, trying to get FaceTime with the boss, pleasing each other, not speaking up, being shy, whatever it is. And also now let's map what are sort of the core, what's the aspired culture? And it's always interesting when I ask people, I always ask these people this question, like, what do you want to move towards? So everybody has this wisdom of what they want to move towards. And I've never heard somebody say, I want to move towards an authoritarian, competitive, silo, repressive culture. Nobody ever says that. Usually people say, no, I want to have more, become more respect, more collaborative, more partnership, more innovative, more bold. And so the question then is, once we've mapped that, how do we move from these crocodiles, let's say from silos, to collaboration? How do we do that? And then I work with the leadership team first, because it always starts with us. You know thyself, says about the Oracle in Delphi when you walk in there, like, know thyself. How are you unconsciously promoting those crocodiles, for example, as a leader, right? How are you making it unsafe for other people to speak up unconsciously? How are you using top-down stuff, even if you didn't mean to? And then we go from the leaders to helping the leaders figure out how to lead themselves, and then how to lead others, and how to lead together towards others. Mm-hmm. So these are usually the steps we take. And then we go from the leadership team to their teams, and often what we call culture ambassadors or change champions. You can find all of this in chapter 9 from Taming Your Crocodiles if you were want to know really more about how we do that.
I worked at a company where the CFO had as his ringtone the Darth Vader theme song whenever the CEO would call him. And you can imagine sitting in a boardroom hearing like, dun, 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 dun. And like, it created a culture where I felt scared of the CEO just because of the CFO's ringtone. And I'm sure that was not the intention, but he was creating a crocodile.
Absolutely. And so unconscious, right? I appreciate you bringing this up, Susan, because part of me taming your crocodiles are moving from where we are to where we want to go. Like, have some fun with it.
Yeah.
We in the work that we do, we have a lot of fun. Like, we do crocodile theater. Like, let's figure out, if we really get into our crocodiles, how does this conversation go? Okay, get it out. And now let's figure out how our house would do this. And so it creates a sense of compassion. And so I think comedians are great at this. They help us to find the balcony perspective on ourselves that way.
Well, I want to move back to connectiveness. I wanted to ask you, especially at your new book, The Connectivist Quotient, coming out in 2025, what excites you the most about it?
I have this vision that somehow I can contribute a little bit more to connectedness becoming mainstay in society. Like when I walk into companies these days and I work with them for a long time, I see crocodiles and owls on the wall and the people talk about it, right? What I would envision is people reading this book and connectedness, just like love, becoming something that people feel drawn to. That excites me. That potential excites me. That far transcends my individual little person, right? I hope somebody will write a better book than The Connectedness Quotient after that about connectedness. That would be really exciting. Now, we're in this year and we're in election season, right? And I can feel it already. The signs going up in the yards for the different parties, and people suddenly are no longer friends with their neighbor. Simply because our orientation is not connectedness, it's judgment and it's control and it's obsession. So my vision for this book is that more and more people will be able to pause and notice this crocodilian disconnecting reactivity in themselves and saying, yeah, but what's really important to me?
Hilke, what projects are next for you and Growth Leaders Network?
Well, the project Connectedness Quotient book is the project I am in currently.
Yes.
So I'm finishing that writing and getting it out. What I'm also going to be doing is more public speaking, which I've not been doing as much the last few years. So I'll be doing that more. And then just continuing to work with clients on that we love working with, like that, this to continue to bring this work of connectedness by working on culture and teams and ourselves to clients. And there's one other offspring in this, which is climate connectedness. I also work with Arizona State University to help bring climate consciousness more into leadership, where we can figure out that as leaders, we do all have a role to play in taking care of the environment, the house, the home we live in.
Thank you so much, Hilke, for coming on Inspired Leadership. It was such a pleasure to have you here.
My pleasure and an honor to be with you both, Susan and Tyler. Love the conversation and love your questions. I feel more connected to you. So there's something in the way you do this that that works for me. Thank you.
And that's a wrap. Thank you to Hilke Faber for coming on the Inspired Leadership Podcast. And what are you going to do to foster a greater sense of connectedness with each person you interact with every day? That's something to reflect on and definitely something to act on. Connectedness with every interaction. Until next time.